From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, October 8th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The Maine Center for Disease Control is reporting 35 additional cases today of COVID-19, most of those in Cumberland and York counties. The number of deaths in the state remains the same, 142. And across the state, there are 597 active cases. Attorney General Aaron Frey is pledging to vigorously enforce laws that protect the right to vote. Frey issued an advisory to elections officials, law enforcement, and residents today, reinforcing that voter intimidation is not allowed in the state. In the message, Frey points to numerous media reports of activities close to polling places that, quote, may cause voters to fear for their safety while waiting to cast their vote. Recent national stories have described Republican efforts to deploy thousands of volunteer poll watchers to monitor voting. The attorney general says that while poll watchers from political parties are allowed, state law prohibits anyone within 200 feet of a polling place from interfering or, quote, attempting to influence voting. At a briefing today, Secretary of State Matt Dunlap said that local polling place wardens have the authority to enforce those rules.
So we've been making sure that wardens have that information, that if someone tries to intimidate voters or get in the way of people participating in the process, they have the legal authority to ask them to leave, and if they refuse, they can have law enforcement remove them for the duration of the election if they do not comply with the warden's directives.
Early voting began in Maine earlier this week. And a new analysis of census data by the National Center for Budget and Policy Priorities and Maine Center for Economic Policy finds that about a quarter of Maine adults are having trouble paying their usual household expenses.
Yeah, that includes things like utility bills, groceries, being able to make payments for your rent or your mortgage, putting gas in the car, sort of that sort of thing, sort of everyday expenses that we all sort of have to put in our regular weekly or monthly budgets.
James Mile with the Maine Center for Economic Policy says 257,000 people report having trouble making their weekly expenses is a good indicator that they're not being confident or they're not feeling confident in the economy. Maine's is a lower percentage than most states, which Miles says is probably due to the lower rates of COVID-19 in Maine and the bump from Maine's quieter-than-usual tourist season. The data from the Census Household Pulse Survey was collected in the last 2 weeks of September. In weather tonight, clear skies with winds calming and lows in the 20s to the mid-30s. Tomorrow starting out sunny but becoming overcast in the west, highs in the low 50s to low 60s. The Maine CDC is investigating an outbreak of 13 cases of COVID-19 at a Skowhegan area charter school. Most of the cases are among staff, and the school's executive director says the situation underscores how quickly and almost unknowingly the virus can spread. Patty White has details.
Of the 13 known cases at Community Regional Charter School on Thursday afternoon, four are among students. But the other nine, says Executive Director Travis Works, are among staff.
We have a couple of adults that work directly with kids, but it tends to be mainly the, for all intents and purposes, the administrators or administrative assistants.
Works says administrative staff follow safety protocols, but they're in a lot of meetings together, and it's not always possible to maintain a six-foot distance. Masks are worn most of the time, he says, but they're often pulled off when answering the phone. And sometimes phones are shared.
Sometimes you get a parent phone call on your cell phone and you hand it to another person. You know, something so simple that you might not think of in that moment that now we're in retrospect going, oh, that is a possibility.
Community Regional Charter School, which encompasses three buildings across two towns, was first alerted on Sunday of a positive case associated with its preschool program. It closed that building and, over the next couple of days, closed all buildings as cases accumulated. The Maine CDC was just hours into its investigation during a news briefing Thursday when Director Nirav Shah announced the outbreak. The agency hasn't drawn any definitive conclusions on how the virus was transmitted at the charter school, but Shaw says that outbreaks can stem from small lapses in safety protocols. He says there's a phenomenon where people in a workplace may wear face coverings around others, school staff around students, for example, or hospital staff around patients.
But when the employees are congregating with one another in a break room or in a cafeteria, face covering usage might fall off. We saw that at an outbreak at a hospital earlier in the summer.
The school is reviewing and tightening staff protocols to prepare to reopen on Monday the 19th. Nearby public schools have closed for the remainder of the week as a precautionary measure. In a letter to parents, MSAD 54 Superintendent John Moody says there's crossover between the public and charter schools, and a student at Skowhegan High School has tested positive. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Over the course of nearly three decades, Republican Senator Susan Collins has crafted a centrist brand that once made her one of the most popular politicians in the country. Now, a combination of controversial votes and increasingly nationalized politics has her locked in the fight of her political career. Steve Missler traces her story in the latest of our candidate profiles.
In mid-September, Collins' campaign bus rolled through Rangeley and Farmington for a series of appearances with supporters. She made sure to bring up Height of Land, a pull-off on the Rangeley Lakes scenic byway with spectacular views of the nearby lakes and mountains.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And I helped get almost $3 million to develop that years ago. And to see it.
And earlier this month, Collins toured downtown Waterville, where Portland Pie Company owner Patrick Mulligan thanked her for co-authoring a coronavirus relief program that provided forgivable loans to small businesses.
I'm trying to get another round going for those that are the hardest hit.
Yeah.
These kinds of visits have long been standard for the 67-year-old Collins, but they've taken on heightened significance in this election.
People still look at the impact on their own lives.
In Collins' view, Mainers have benefited from her longevity, her deep roots in Maine, in the power she wields as a member of the Appropriations Committee and its Transportation Subcommittee. She says all of that will be lost if voters elect her leading challenger, Democrat Sarah Gideon, who she says lacks her experience and connection to the state.
Nor would she have the clout and seniority that I have to bring much-needed assistance into our state.
Collins's focus on experience is meant to draw a contrast with the 48-year-old Gideon, a two-term Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives and a Rhode Island native who began the race as a relatively unknown political figure. But that local focus is also a pivot from the national politics that have damaged Collins' once enviable popularity and now has her running in a virtual dead heat with a Democrat who has never run for statewide office. Collins attributes her position in the polls to a messaging campaign that she says has distorted her record and attacked her integrity.
And I think after 2 years of that pummeling, that unfortunately it has had an impact.
It's true that Democrats and liberal interest groups have unleashed an expensive and sustained campaign against Collins. But it's also true that Republican groups have responded in kind. Outside spending for and against Gideon is almost equal to that for and against Collins, according to the latest data by the Center for Responsive Politics. And none of that spending would have much of an impact if there wasn't already trouble in Collins' once dominant coalition of voters. But there is.
Mr. President, I will vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh.
For Democratic voters, and Democratic women in particular, Collins' announcement on October 5th, 2018, that she would vote to confirm Supreme Court Judge Brett Kavanaugh marked a turning point.
I am shaking mad. I am furious.
The pressure campaign directed at Collins by liberal groups before the Kavanaugh vote was intense. After all, she has been a supporter of abortion rights since she first ran for the Senate in 1996.
I am pro-choice. Unlike Joe Brennan, I've always been pro-choice and I always will be.
And her abortion stance appealed to groups like Planned Parenthood, which sometimes ran ads thanking her for votes in the Senate.
Senator Collins, I want to thank you for standing with Planned Parenthood.
Call Senator Collins and thank her for standing.
But there's no more gratitude from Planned Parenthood. The group has already spent $1 million trying to defeat Collins. And its former director, Cecile Richards, worked alongside an activist group that pulled in nearly $4 million in crowdfunding inspired by Collins' Kavanaugh vote.
When Senator Collins cast one of the deciding votes to give a man credibly accused of sexual assault a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, she sent an unmistakable message. She doesn't have the courage to stand up to Donald Trump.
That was Richards speaking to Maine activists this summer when the $4 million was transferred to Gideon's campaign. a move that Collins has described as a bribe. But the disenchantment among abortion rights supporters overshadowed the pressure Collins faced from members of her own party, which had rallied behind Trump's 2016 vow to install conservative, pro-life judges on the court. It resurfaced recently when Collins announced that she will oppose Trump's nomination of Amy Coney Barrett if the confirmation vote is held before the election.
People are calling me saying they just can't vote for her anymore. These are all people, Republicans, mostly the conservative part of the party.
That was former Republican Governor Paul LePage recently on Portland radio station WGAN. He claims he's telling conservative hardliners that they have to support Collins because she could be key to Republicans holding the U.S. Senate. LePage's defense of Collins might seem transactional, and it's definitely a sharp turn from 4 years ago.
I think Susan Collins is done in Maine. I think her decision to go against the wishes of the Maine Republicans really cooked her goose.
LePage was reacting to Collins' 2016 decision to announce she would not support President Trump, which he explained on PBS NewsHour.
He lacks the temperament, the judgment, the knowledge, and the self-restraint to be our next president.
Collins' assessment of Trump was cheered by Democrats, but it stoked the ire of Maine conservatives, with whom she has long had an uneasy alliance. Those strains were especially acute during the first year of the Trump presidency, and especially after Collins cast one of the deciding votes to oppose the GOP repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Her vote on the health care repeal made her a temporary hero of the left and the recipient of glowing portraits by liberal columnists, spurring talk that she might return to Maine and run for governor.
I have concluded that the best way that I can contribute to these priorities is to remain a member of the United States Senate. Thank you.
Do you ever look back and second guess yourself on that decision?
No, I tend to look forward.
Collins says she isn't dwelling on the halcyon days when her popularity was at its apex. Instead, she attributes her current situation to the multi-million-dollar campaign to unseat her.
Tens of millions of dollars in dark money ads that lie about my record, defame my reputation, mislead people about who I am.
Many of those ads link Collins with the president that she didn't vote for in 2016 and cast her as an avatar for Republicans' supine response to Trump's divisive conduct. Collins voted earlier this year to acquit Trump of impeachment charges, but she won't say if she supports the president's reelection. And she blasted Democrats for describing her, quote, as a stooge for male leaders of her party.
The idea that Mitch McConnell or Donald Trump dictates, or any other man dictates my vote, is the height of sexism.
Collins says she's confident Maine voters will see through it and make a distinction between their feelings about Trump and her. Her bid for a fifth term might just depend on it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 11 for a conversation with Senator Susan Collins. I'm Nora Flaherty.